Repeat after me to attain your goals. Happiness, a college education, a good job, a healthy family, respect for your neighbors, retirement, happiness. Repeat after me to attain your goals. Happiness.
Ignorance.
A college education.
Mental programming.
A good job.
Slavery.
A healthy family.
Corporate control.
Respect for your neighbors.
Governmental abuses.
Retirement.
Obey.
Happiness.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am. Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am. Sofa King.
Faster.
I am.
Sofa King. No, not so fast.
So.
Loses meaning.
I am. Sofa King with Todd.
You say funny things.
Hey, we gotta straighten all this up. You guys, can you straighten those papers right there, Brent?
Good. Thought about it.
Good. Those drinks are too close together. I think you're good now. I think that's good. You got a fucking mess over there, Sam. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
You know, if you organize it like this, you don't spill anything.
Sam, how many drinks do you have?
Yeah. Well,
this one gets me going into the show.
Ah, that sounds
once,
familiar.
Once we're going, then I can work into this. And, you know, if we go too long, then I...
That sounds pigeon. That sounds pigeon to me.
You have four drinks?
There's really only two. Just the leftovers. I haven't cleaned.
I have two.
Like you said, I haven't cleaned up my area.
Yeah. I have two whiskeys, a beer, and a coffee.
Yeah, clean up the play yard over there. Jesus Christ. Looks like my kid's room. Fucking mess.
And I'm still not going to clean it, Dad.
Oh. I learned it from you.
Motherfucker knows what I do to babies. I'm getting keyboard fingers over here. Touchy.
Man. Some old people got Dave's joke about the after school drug special commercial. Yeah, nice. I got it.
Nice. I don't even know what that's from.
It was
that's
a real, okay. This is your brain on drugs reference.
I think I may have went too far at one of my daughter's softball practices.
Oh God.
Fucking.
Oh, I'm going to go out on a limb before you even tell the story and say you went too far.
Yeah. If I'm saying it.
We're over the limit.
I don't think so.
How old was the kid and is he okay?
No, it was a girl.
Okay.
Underage. No, the fucking coach's daughter, I'm just going to say she's not fit. I'm not going to say anything mean about her, but she goes out and she doesn't grab a ball from the dugout, right? Like you go out to warm up, you know, and you grab a ball because you need a fucking ball to play softball.
It helps,
right?
Otherwise it's just soft.
Yeah. She walks out there and fucking like yells at the dad who's the coach. And is like, can somebody get me a ball? Jesus Christ. And I was like, oh my fucking God. I will slap the shit out of a kid if they said something to me like that. I said it out loud. Like the parents started looking at me and shit. And I'm like, I would fucking walk over there and knock that overweight Snickers eating fucking little kid down. Like that's some bullshit. And the parents were just fucking eyeballing me like bad. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm the bad guy for fucking wanting to discipline an outrageous fucking kid? Like, this is ridiculous.
At least you can back it up. My wife did that at soccer games, and I literally made her go to the car. She was just like, it's about fucking time, ref! Like, yelling at some fucking kid that's like seven or some shit. And then a fucking crew of fucking Mexicans with Raider shirts on the other side were like, raw! Like
Raider
fucking,
Nation.
Yeah, it was like fucking, like,
fuck that.
Braveheart was going to come towards me. And I was like, shit, I had to walk across the field and go apologize. And the wives over there were going crazy, but then the husbands felt for me because they knew their wives were going crazy and shit. Oh fuck!
And we're talking about Kurt Cobain today, and I listened to a documentary where he just talked about his life and his childhood and how he felt about people, and I was really on his tip. Like, I hate people. Like, if you're not in my circle, I fucking hate you. I dislike you so much that I will tell you.
They just entertain me. I call them mouth breathers. Well, I like watching.
No, and I'm just like, I don't, though, because it pisses. It, like, makes me, it enrages me. Like, I feel like I have an anger issue. And I'm really good at, like, keeping cool. Like, I don't lose my cool. But I say shit. Like,
I think I know why the parents around you are upset.
Why?
Because You didn't say Snickers eating. You said Sniggers.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
Like just maybe, right now, you maybe. Said Sniggers.
Sniggers. I'm
which
racist.
Is a really good racist candy bar.
Yeah, well, it's really good. Well, they are dark brown. You know, I mean,
I love some Snickers. Yeah,
they're sweet inside. It's all that matters.
Yeah, I guess.
Peanutty.
Yeah, that shit just outrages me, though. I don't know.
Outrages me. Yeah. That's a new one.
Yeah, it makes me nutrageous.
That's a Brad shirt.
Outrageous me.
Yeah, that shit outrageous me.
Yeah.
So again, we have our the moderator of our unofficial fan page, Sam Culper, here.
We're powerless against him, for the record. If you fuck up, he'll kick you out. We can't do anything about it. This is his, yeah. It's his page. It's a good time in there, but he owns it.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you what you think of Fight Club Studios, Sam Culper.
Speechless. You have it there, folks.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
I'm speechless.
Yeah.
It's everything I'd hoped for and more. This is it's Mecca.
Yeah.
It's more whiskey than I thought we would accrue. That's a good, impressive.
Did you guys see I compiled the list? Someone asked for the list.
Yeah, there was a lot on there.
I'm gonna disagree, Dave, and say you guys don't have enough yet.
Yeah, no, it's getting whiskey. There.
Well
it's
played, there. Sir. Well played.
Yeah. Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
Yeah, so speaking of whiskey, what's our whiskey of the day here?
Josh Haney. He has sent us 4 bottles in 2 weeks.
God love you, Josh Haney.
King of the fucking whiskey gifts for sure. I called and tried to re-gift him a shirt or something and he says no.
What's
he
his loves patron us. Level? He's,
this doesn't matter. It's 4 bottles of whiskey.
Yeah, he's a 4 bottle of whiskey.
I know, but it could
he's
be
up
like
up to 4 bottles.
Yeah, yeah. It could be.
And this isn't shit either. I mean, it's not like
it's
he's
good
sending
stuff.
You the
no,
Kentucky
he said
Daffer.
That's fucking good yeah. shit. So what's this one?
He gave us something called Burnside Oregon Oaked Bourbon, which I've never heard of. So it's not like a mainstream one that I know of.
It's definitely a white whiskey.
It's a small
whiskey.
Batch.
Yeah, their logo is, or their slogan is, put some sideburns on your face.
Well, we do know there are no colored people, Mexicans, blacks, Indians, Asians in Oregon.
That's
pretty
true. Much.
So it is a white bourbon.
Even the gardeners are white.
The
Oregon.
Gardeners are white. Yeah.
Yeah, my brother,
and the criminals.
In,
the criminals
are all white.
My brother lives in Oregon, and I have to say, like, when I got up there and I was like driving in from the airport, I was with my sister.
Your white
we
brother,
were,
right?
We were like, white. Why, where? Like, everyone's yeah. white.
Well, the
like, we
were just like the immigrants are Canadian.
Like everybody's white.
I fucking tripped out. We were going to Washington, and we drove through Oregon, and we stopped at like one of the fucking, it's like the Walmart of Oregon or whatever, and we went in to get some like snacks and shit. And I'm looking and I felt really odd. And I was walking around and I'm looking and I'm like, what is wrong? Like something's wrong.
Right.
Like I feel
kind of can't place
it. Something's wrong. I can't place it. Like I don't have my racist radar on, you know? And I'm like, something is really like really out of place. And I'm like, there's not a fucking Mexican in sight. I don't see a black person.
Everybody had a resting hipster face.
Everybody was fucking granola. They looked like a bowl of oatmeal. Like fucking just, it was crazy.
They carried little trees around them just so they could hug them.
Nobody had their hair done. Mm-hmm. I felt out of place. I was like, this is insane. Like I didn't see a fucking Maybelline fucking face for like 3 miles.
Just like patchouli and B.O.
But I'm hoping they know how to make their bourbon.
Maybe, yeah. We'll check this out. Bourbon isn't made in Oregon, really. It's not supposed to be called that, but you know. This is the slow part in our show. I'll let everybody else drink it and die first. And
oh damn,
Sam drank
that
it. So I'm safe.
Shit,
he drank it. I watched him do it over his shoulder.
That's the best bourbon that we've tried, stuff. As far as I'm concerned. Nice.
So I want to go ahead and point
that's
out
that's fucking legit right there,
Dave. You're not allowed to say you don't like bourbon anymore. It's fucking over.
No, I've stopped saying that. Okay. I just don't like. But this is fucking really good.
I think you that's had like really a whiskey good. You didn't like, and then judged all bourbon.
Oh no, I've confessed that. It's Jim Beam.
I have to say.
That shit's good.
It's spicy.
Yeah.
No, that's good.
I hope a whiskey company hires you, like something like a tasting place hires you, and then you get to write in the magazine. It's like Brad Taylor says it's spicy.
4 stars. Spicy.
It's spicy. 2017.
Josh Haney, thank you. Man. That is fucking legit. That is delicious. That's one of my favorite that we've had in quite a while. That's really good.
I agree, Dave. That is probably one of the best. I mean, there's the Westward was good. That was from up north too. That was from Washington, right?
Yeah. That stuff was good. I'm Westward. Sad it's gone, but
yeah, fucking what is it? Sideburn?
Oh, it says put some sideburns on it.
Yeah. No, it's
it's actually called
Burnside.
Burnside.
Yeah,
that's tasty.
Put some sideburns on.
Yeah, Yeah, I'm not into the sideburns.
Well done. East side to ceiling. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
So is that it?
Yeah,
I think we're done. Kurt Cobain, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he shot himself in the face because he was
Kurt Cobain. Yeah.
Well, there is a Kurt Cobain's rapper. I wonder if that's the ending song.
No, it might very well be. I was wondering what the ending song was going to be. Mm. It's really hard not to play or, a Nirvana
I mean,
song,
Biggie, but... Biggie, Who Shot You? I mean, there's always that one.
Yeah, that's
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I can't. I fought with myself over this. I knew we were going to do Kurt Cobain. I was like, you know, I could do a Nirvana song. But no, nah, I can't do that. I can't do that.
It's not the right genre.
Nah.
I wanted to point something out. We just had a fan. I need to talk about El Yucateco. So I'm going to exploit this person's post that just came through on Instagram. Chelsea Abshire just posted some red El Yucateco. She's mixing it into the hamburger meat before she makes patties. So
that's how you do it with the black.
I haven't done that yet.
With black. Yeah.
She's doing red though.
Yeah. So. I think she just doesn't have black.
Dave, have you done that with tofurkey?
Ooh, you can't really mix anything into tofurkey.
It doesn't stick.
It's like a cute. It looks like a sponge.
Well, the only tofurkey I buy is like lunch meat slices.
Ooh. Oh yeah, it's a solid. It repels.
No, they're fucking delicious.
It's hydrophobic.
I'm gonna
point something out about vegans and saying shit is fucking delicious.
I'll bring you some fucking tofurkey lunch
meat. And it'll taste like old Chinese toys. It'll taste cardboard like, boxes it'll, with soy okay. sauce.
It'll taste exactly like packaged turkey.
Make us eat our words.
Bring it. Yeah, bring it.
I'll try. That sounds
yeah.
Really
bring
bad.
Some vegan foods with a little ice chest. And let's fucking try some shit. I'm down.
I'll try to remember to
my
bring
experience with my vegetarian friends say this shit's delicious. Tastes just like hot wings.
I mean, like no, it like doesn't. The kale chips and stuff. Like,
yeah,
no, kale chips are fucking hit or miss. Man.
Those Morningstar Farms burgers and the other one. What's the other one? There's like a garden Boca. Burger one. Boca burgers. That I was fucking impressed with. If you put all the fixings on a Boca burger and you barbecue it. I really can't fucking tell the difference. And the Morningstar Farms corn dogs, they're just fucking lying to you guys.
Oh, they're those are real fucking indistinguishable. Hot dogs. Those are real hot dogs. No, this I mean,
you could really just make anything into a hot dog though.
Well, I put the tofurkey lunch meat on the same level as those Morningstar Farms hot
dogs. When you cut those corn dogs in half, the meat texture swirl, everything looks like a hot dog. Oh yeah, that's the tip. Just a tip.
Yeah, just a tip. Yeah. Right on the eye.
Got the piano, the pigeon shoe.
What's that?
Like beef.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I don't know.
What's for dinner, man?
Yeah, I would. If I could never eat a baby again, it'd be horrible.
Yeah.
One of our fans messaged me and was asking if the Donner Party is really how they started Spam. Oh, man. It kind of made me laugh.
So, okay. So I'm going to say that we're doing Kurt Cobain right now because last week would have been his 50th birthday.
I saw that February 20th, right?
And that really has nothing to do with why, but like, it's always weird because a lot of times we pick a show topic and then we look and it's like, oh, it's the 75th anniversary this week. And it's like, that really is.
We really got to try harder. Like, this could have got released on the date.
I mean, we're close enough.
Why start doing professional shit now?
Yeah, exactly.
Like almost 200 episodes in.
We're too far in to get professional.
No. It has to be this way.
The fans all knew. And that's why they voted for it on the list is because it was a birthday tribute anyway. They knew it was coming up.
And it's funny because we had no idea. We're just like, we just do this thing called a podcast and sit here and talk, you know, and we're like,
but I don't think our fans knew that it was his 50th birthday.
I don't either.
I haven't listened to a podcast in, I don't know how fucking long now, actually. I haven't had time. Yeah. Like, I haven't listened to any fucking podcast.
The Dude Where's My Dad podcast. I have to listen to that every week. I mean, it's just, that's
even though you found him.
Yeah, but I haven't talked to him though. So it's like, I'm like reforming. Like, so like I call in and I'm like telling them about how I found my dad. And, you know, other people haven't though.
You should check out Dolly Parton Farton.
No, I don't want to do that.
I don't know, man.
Oh, what are we going to do about the patrons?
I think somebody's made that one since
we'll do Patreon
Monday.
Yeah, Sam Culper. That's his new signature podcast. Yep. You can check it out.
Dolly Parton Farton.
Been looking for something.
So Kurt Cobain, we've done other musicians in the past, and a lot of people voted for Kurt Cobain on the fan site. So we decided to do it as a topic. And of course, there is somewhat of a conspiracy theory that surrounds his death at the end there. So we'll get into some Kurt Cobain. And I will say up front that I never. Like, I am prime Generation X. Like my
That's your hacker name.
Yeah, that's right. My birth year is like the smack dab in the middle of Generation X, Generation X year. And grunge and Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, like that is Generation X.
Yeah.
And when he was big, I have to admit, I didn't really give a shit. And when he died, I didn't really give a shit. And it, I never listened to rock at the time. Like
Guess who did give a shit?
Are you in your black phase at that point?
I was brokenhearted a year and a half later when Eazy-E died, but I just never cared when Kurt Cobain died.
It wasn't my scene, man.
Now I can appreciate it. Like I really only start, to be honest, in my life, the only time that I started to enjoy rock music was when I was ridiculously addicted to Rock Band, the video.
And heroin.
A lot of heroin. Yeah, Rock Band.
Nirvana was back on Rock Band heavy. Yeah. What, heroin?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I'm the exact opposite of that because I'm also prime Generation Xer. Mm-hmm. In April of 1994, I was 19 years old. I had the scraggly hair.
Oh, perfect.
I was wearing the Doc Martens and the flannel. I had flannel shirt tied around, wearing, you know, and I wanted to be a guitar rock star. So, I mean, that was the world that I was living in. So in April of 94, when he died, that was my Kennedy assassination for our generation.
Damn, Pearl Harbor.
I know what was going on.
I know so many people. And they can recall, they can recall exactly where they were when they found out Kurt Cobain died. I remember I was at college at the time. People were fucking crying and like not showing up in class that day. And I was just like, cause the fucking Nirvana guy died. Like I didn't, I didn't even call him by name.
He's like, let me shed a dread for him, guys. Come on.
This was such a big deal that right off the bat, there were like 10,000 people that showed up to mourn him in Seattle where that happened. You know, they had 68 that were copycat suicides that were people who were, you know, empathizing and feeling what he felt. I mean,
that was a very, very
big, profound thing.
No, it was a huge thing. Yeah.
That's when I started heroin. I mean, it just made sense.
Yeah. Now that I appreciate rock, which I never did before, and I listened back because I listened to a good amount of it while I was doing research. I listened to a lot of Nirvana and I fully appreciate the impact he had. I fully appreciate how much they changed rock music. Like at the time I didn't because that wasn't, you know.
Well, they went from kind of punk to kind of like pushing the pop thing, you know, and people didn't like.
Well, they also gave way to like Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam.
Oh, they
like
gave way to tons of shit. Yeah.
And they were pushing an envelope, but it was a different envelope. You went from this LA glam thing where
hair rock,
super polished, over rehearsed recording
like
stuff.
Snake with lipstick
I don't give a fuck what I look like, and it's all about the art and screw the record companies. I don't care about the money in this. I'm gonna do it just for the art.
And again, I oddly enough, a lot of people probably don't make a connection here, but I see him to be a similar thing to NWA, which is more where my mind was at the time. Because people look at
grunge, was that for white people.
He was, you know, I mean, people look at grunge and it's like that Generation X didn't give a fuck about how they dressed. And it's like in rap, you wore fucking khakis and a Dickies shirt. Mm-hmm. Like you didn't give, it wasn't fucking bling. It wasn't, you know, that. Yeah. And in rock, you wore fucking shit you got at the Goodwill and flannel. And it's like, it was just this anti-establishment. I don't give a fuck how you want me to dress. I'm just going to wear whatever the fuck I have. Like it was the same idea was there.
And it's funny that you say that too, because Nirvana is one group that really crosses over to hip hop. You know what I mean? Like hip hop guys really enjoy Nirvana.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? I read that something like 56 songs
have been covered or
have sampled or covered.
Sampled or covered or have used part of his lyrics.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest one, Jay-Z, Holy Grail, he used some of his lyrics, kind of changed them. He got Courtney Love's, you know, permission and whatnot. Wow. But like he made an impression on hip hop because of that same thing you're talking about, about just, you know, fuck everybody. You know, like this is us. We're doing this.
And I mean, I read a quote for, and it's in my notes somewhere, but Lars Ulrich from Metallica was talking about the impact that he had, and he was saying that like the whole idea was that like all of rock was just like you said, Sam, it was just shitty morning. Makeup, like hair bands. Like, this is what rock was formula. Leading into that. Like, there were two sides to rock music.
Well, there was the music. Record label formula. Yeah. Like, that's what they did.
There were two sides to rock music at the time. It was either pure fucking hair band, She's My Cherry Pie, fucking lipstick bullshit, or it was like Metallica, Megadeth, let's see how dark we can go kind of mode. And then he was sort of Iron Maiden. He was honest. Yeah. Like, people could relate to him. Like, he didn't go into like death, gloom, and doom. He didn't go into like just like fucking sex and chasing women and partying. Like, his lyrics had substance. He dressed like everybody else dressed,
which
he
is
because I even remember. I remember watching like when he was on the fucking Grammys and shit. And I even remember like in my Generation X anti-establishment brain, I was like, "Really, you're gonna fucking show up at the Grammys in like a dirty t-shirt and some fucking jeans?" Like, I was like, "Wow, that's really like everybody's all dressed up." He was like, "I don't give a fuck. It's what I woke up in this morning, and I'm fucking showing up in it." You know,
and it was a whirlwind too when you look at. From the time that Nirvana was formed to the time he was dead, this is like a 5-year.
Yeah. Oh,
I
fuck
mean,
yeah.
He went from obscurity to being the king of music. I mean, he was
and
the
still
absolute
is.
Top
I mean,
of music. Yeah. I think
Hall of Fame, and he was only around for not very long.
Yeah. He's
not going to work here anymore.
7 to 94.
Yeah. There was a period of time where he was the highest selling dead musician.
Yeah.
He had topped Elvis even.
Yeah.
And I think since they've sold some rights, Elvis is back on top. But I mean, that's a really profound thing.
Huge.
For a guy.
And it's like huge.
He was only really in the limelight for about 3 years.
And I read an article, and it was a couple of years older. I forget what year it came out, but they were talking about how that year, it might've been 2015 that it was published, but it was talking about how the year that they published the article, the top selling album in the world had sold 1.4 million copies of the album. And Nirvana's first album sold 10 million copies. It's like, I mean, there's just no comparison to
like Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean?
Huge,
like, it's huge.
Like massive.
Yeah, I think in total, they sold 25 million in the United States and 75 million in Europe.
Crazy.
Fucking Europeans.
Crazy. Yeah.
Crazy, yeah. So he, Cobain, just to give some backspin on him, he was born in 1967. So he was pure Generation X as well. He was born in Aberdeen, Washington, just a small logging town. And from everything I read, he was very artistic and he was musically inclined early on. He played like drums and little things that his parents would give him.
Flute.
A lot of skin flute.
Yeah.
And he came from a pretty shitty background. His parents were always arguing when he was young, like just fucking shitty, volatile background.
I think it was normal. Like they got a divorce.
Yeah,
when
he got a divorce when he was 9 years old. Yeah. Yeah.
At a time that people didn't get divorced as much.
Not as much.
Yeah.
It wasn't as common. It was
worse than just that, though, because once they got divorced, you know, you have the fight over the kids. You're going to live with mom, you're going to live with dad. Nobody really wanted him.
Yeah.
Nobody could handle him.
Right. Yeah.
So he
was kind of a little dick, though.
And they separated kind of him from his sister. His sister was born in 71.
Right.
And she went with the mom and he went with the dad.
But then dad couldn't take him and mom couldn't take him. And then at a very, very young age, he was essentially homeless.
Basically.
He ends up bouncing back and forth. He lived with his high school principal for a little while. I read something that talked about him. Actually, he would go to the hospital he was born in Aberdeen, and he would spend the nights sleeping on the couches in the hospital waiting room,
because
he knew that nobody would fuck with the guy that was sitting in the hospital waiting on a family member that was sick.
That's smart.
So that, I mean,
he could kind of lay there and go to sleep.
He was really just kind of roaming around homeless because he didn't have any place that was really his.
Yeah, he would sneak back in his mom's basement. He stayed with friends. He just constantly moved around.
But he kind of liked it too, though. He was kind of, not that he liked being homeless, but he liked the fact that he was just kind of didn't have anywhere to be. You know, untethered. He kind of just did what he wanted to do. He would take beer to friends' house. They would drink.
At one point, he started hanging out with a gay guy in high school just because they assumed he was gay.
Yeah.
And he liked it. He said that he was like,
well, he didn't,
gay
he,
in spirit.
Yeah, he didn't know that the guy was gay, and he was hanging out with him. And he didn't know he was gay until the guy hit on him.
Yeah.
And then he was like, "Hey, you know, I'm not gay, but I'll still be your buddy."
And he let everyone think he was gay just because he hated fucking people. He's like, "They leave me alone."
He said, he said that he really enjoyed it because it gave him a different spin on his life. You know, it was not a pressure, but like it was like he got attention from people in a bad way, but he liked it. Because it made him different. Well, and that's what he wanted. And
mostly because he got left alone. Like, he had problems with, like, the, I guess the divorce thing. Like, people actually fucking messed with him for it. There's some hanging out. He starts smoking pot. Like, that was his escape. He realized he could smoke pot and escape from reality. And the only way he could get pot was hanging out with some bad kids. Yeah. And so he hanging out with some fucking guy that he actually hated because that was the only guy that could get pot. And then they start hanging out. Sam's got a story for this one. They start hanging out at a... We'll say, I don't know, slow, mentally handicapped.
I had never heard this story before until I was kind of researching this. It's there are a couple of really good documentaries this documentary was called A Montage of Heck. And what it is, it's a whole bunch of his pictures and his journals and some animation. I think he has
an album or there's something called Montage of Heck, and they named that documentary.
Right, that's where it comes from. Yeah. But there's all of these drawings that he made as a kid and family pictures and things like that. And all of this is played over some of his songs and some of his, him probably telling stories and talking.
It's
over
a good,
the top of
it's
it.
A good documentary.
It's a pretty good documentary, and it interviews some people that hadn't been interviewed in some of the several other documentaries. But there was one story in there where he's recounting his youth and how people didn't like him. And he's talking about this house that they used to go to. And it was the intellectually challenged girl in their school. They called her the retarded fat girl,
right?
Basically. And they would go to her house because she would let them come over and they could distract her and hang out and go down to the basement and steal booze from her parents.
Right. So they would dance with her and stuff. One guy would go downstairs, they'd get the alcohol and then they'd take off.
Well,
rough.
That's fucked up.
So this was his coming of age story where he's talking about how he was really first exposed to sex. And
They said he was scrawny. He's not athletic.
Right.
He
nobody really liked him.
No luck with the
shit. He had a funny haircut.
Thought he was gay.
He hadn't had a girlfriend or anything.
Hadn't had sex.
And he goes over to this girl's house by himself without his friends one day. And they kind of start messing around. Now, he describes her as slow at best.
Right.
You know, I think he says, I wouldn't call her retarded. I would call her slow. But they end up messing around. And
he straightforward said, let's fuck.
Let's fuck.
Yeah. And she said, okay.
I'm trying to keep this PG, but I don't know why.
Not why.
She didn't say okay. She said, I'm done.
Well, she said something like that. But he finally, they get naked. And he says, I don't know what to do.
Right.
And she says, well, here's what my cousins do.
Oh, yeah.
This is so bizarre.
And it's
I'm sitting here thinking, there's no way this is true.
Yeah.
But it's him telling the story about how this happened.
It's probably true.
Set over a trippy comic book style cartoon.
Like an animated thing of this all happening.
What the hell?
So he finally says that they start messing around, but he couldn't do it. He couldn't handle it because she was too much stank.
He said her vagina smelled and her like sweat, like her personal hygiene was so bad that he got grossed out and left in the middle of it.
Ugh. So he goes back to school and the kids at school get wind that he's done this. And this
by
is
wind,
early teen
he means stink.
By stink.
They smelled her on him.
They start calling him the retard fucker.
Yeah.
And he now is getting bullied because he's been messing around with the special kid.
And the dad found out.
And the dad comes to school wanting to know who's been screwing around with his kid.
Oh,
and he ends up
like
not going back
fucker.
To school and gets in trouble at school. And he this ends up being a big catalyst for him not being able to be around people.
He actually tries to sit on the railroad tracks at that point.
And this for all of these things where they say he's not suicidal and he's never tried suicide and whatnot, this is the first time that you hear of him. And he tells a story about how he got a cinder block and he took it and he went out to the railroad tracks and set the cinder block on and sat down and waited for the train to come and run over him. And the train came and he sat there and waited and it was on the tracks next to him.
And it fucking, so it zooms past him and then he has like an epiphanal moment of realization of like, okay, maybe I don't want to fucking die. Like he has a second chance at it. But Jesus fucking Christ, he laid down, I read it on cinder block, like chunks of concrete on his chest or some shit. Yeah.
He talks, I mean, I listened to an hour and a half of him talking,
right.
Kind of the same thing, like those stories. And he talks about, he wanted to kill himself all the time.
All the time.
It was always, but you got to think about it. Motherfuckers on heroin. You know what I mean? And we talked about this. He's on heroin. His life is just
crazy. The fact of the matter is he was probably fucking clinically depressed.
He was
probably chemically
depressed. He said at nine years old.
He was self-medicating with heroin and weed and everything else.
Beer
and that's
and
not
whatever
gonna
else,
fucking
yeah.
help.
He had a stomach ailment that was like really bad.
Well,
he was constantly in pain.
Yeah, he said he had scoliosis, or like a slip disc or whatever, and his guitar actually aided that and made the scoliosis worse. And his back pain was so bad. But then he got a stomach issue that was worse than his back pain, and he forgot about his his back pain, but he said he actually thought about killing himself over his stomach pain.
Right.
And that's one of those things. Like, some people are just weak. Like,
I just take Pepto, you know, like,
well, I mean,
it seems like the lesser of the evils.
Some people, like, you're depressed. He talked about schizophrenia. You know what I mean? I mean, there was all kinds of, he just had issues. He needed professional help and nobody was there.
Nobody
helped him. And he didn't help himself because he obviously knew these things were going on because he talked about it. He talked about it openly and was like, yeah, you know, after this show, I was super depressed and I wanted to kill myself. But then the next show I'm over here, I'm doing great. You know,
like, he recorded it all. I mean, this stuff is, he is so well documented because he was young enough that he had all these old family videos and he started recording with his aunt. She had all of this music recording equipment. So there are things of 5-year-old Kurt Cobain recording multi-track songs and stuff, you know, but all of that stuff's documented, but he was also this voracious journaler. Mm-hmm. So he wrote down literally everything.
Yeah.
And apparently his uncle Chuck gave him his first guitar, like bought him a used guitar.
He gave him a choice.
He had
a choice between a bike and a guitar and he chose the guitar.
Okay.
Yeah. But before that, his aunt gave him a electric ukulele, I think is what it was. The one that Sam was talking about. So that actually recorded him doing stuff. She gave him like a small, was it a ukulele? Do you know?
I don't know.
So he had a little kid's guitar at like age 4. He had a little piano they gave him, like kid style piano.
He played drums.
He wrote songs about going to school and stuff. Yeah. Like
he was like the early Justin Bieber.
Yeah. He constantly ran around with like that little guitar singing and playing stuff.
She has those recordings of him where he is like 3 years old talking about Bada. And we'll talk about Bada a little bit later.
We will talk about Bada later. Yeah. So in obviously troubled youth, troubled teen years, et cetera. In 85, he started to get in a lot of legal trouble just from typical hoodlum shit, spray painting a building, fucking drunken disorderly contact. No, I didn't.
It was like some, fuck Trump. I'm gonna find it. No, it was weird. It was like whatchamacallit something. It was ain't got no how whatchamacallit. That's what he got in trouble for, spraying on all the cars.
He was just weird. He did shit on purpose. Yeah. Like he said he would put rocks in cans and throw them at cop cars.
He used to write
when he was young.
He would spray paint
like you do.
God is. Oh, look at him. Look at him like you do. Look at Sam pulling in the Dave quote. But it's two things he spray painted were God is gay and ain't got no how whatchamacallit.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know. Other than the candy bar. I don't know what's going on there.
And long about this point, he starts the band that thank God failed called Fecal Matter.
I had a friend who had a band called Feces and Blood.
Yeah.
Joel Stalling.
I have a punk band that I never started, but I have the name for it still. Dead Baby Milkshakes.
A band called Sharon Tate.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Good one. I have a fecal matter called Fecal Matter that I flushed down the toilet. Mm-hmm.
I pulled one of those out of my ass.
So he, at this point, he starts to play guitar more, starts to take music a little bit more seriously, and he meets, and I hadn't really heard of him, and I listened to some of them while I was doing the research, but he starts to hang out with Buzz Osborne, the lead singer from the Melvins, a punk rock group, and they sort of introduce him to punk rock. And
he swears that the first concert he went to was the Melvins. Yeah.
This area that he was from was actually pretty inundated with relatively successful musicians. He had one of the answers somebody was saying, he actually could find people who have succeeded. Like the neighbor across the street was a successful rock musician.
Right.
Whereas now, you know, you hear people say, oh, you know, yeah, sure, you're going to make it. Nobody ever makes it. No, he actually knew, like, that guy over there and the guy two blocks over, they're all on the radio.
Because it rains all the time.
There's nothing
heroin.
Else to do up there except be depressed and make rock
exactly.
music.
Yeah.
And that was the scene. I mean, that was the music scene of the early 90s. Like Seattle, Portland, like the whole Pacific Northwest was where music was fucking coming.
I mean, and it was just now starting to really explode at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and your other option is to be like his dad and be a log counter.
Right.
Like literally walk and count logs.
Or
like
a fisherman.
That's your job, you know. That fucking sucks.
And everybody kept saying that the Melvins, and maybe I didn't listen to enough, everybody kept calling them specifically a punk rock band. I didn't think they sounded like punk rock. They just kind of sounded like a rock band. Are they punk?
They're punk rock.
Okay. Yeah. The songs I heard, I didn't consider to be especially punk, but So anyway, they introduce him to punk rock and he loves it. And this is where he really starts to feel a little bit better and find some people that are sort of akin to him and like similar to him. And long about this time, this is like 1988 or so, he finally settles on the name Nirvana and he starts a group called Nirvana, which isn't the
They had a bunch of names in them between Nirvana too. Yeah,
you'd look at their, you'd look at their posters and it's like, tonight, Nirvana, also known as, and there'd be like nine band names on the same poster.
Fecal, it went from like fecal to blit, like fecal matter to bliss.
Bottle cap.
Yeah, bottle cap, some shit, and then all the way to Nirvana finally.
Yeah. Well, and he had, what was him, and who was the other guy that he worked with?
Can't say the guy's name, the bass player.
Dougie or... No, it was the guy that he first formed the band with that they were trying to get Chris.
The first drummer before Grohl?
Uh-huh.
Chad Channing was one of his drummers. He went through like three drummers.
The first real Nirvana was him, Chad Channing, and Chris Novoselic.
Yeah.
So that was later on. But
and they didn't like Channing's style. So that's actually the first album.
Fired him.
Yeah, they fired him, which is, that's awkward.
And they had apparently they had a really bad situation with the label. Like they didn't get along with the label and they had disagreements with the label.
I literally own a drum set in the other room because it's so awkward for a drummer. Cause like when you have like, oh, you want to play guitar? They can show up and they leave with their shit. And it's like, that didn't work out. I'm not calling that fucking guy again. But when you have a drummer come hang out, it's awkward as fuck. So you're like, oh, we have a drum set. No, don't worry about it. Yeah. Just come by. Like we'll figure it out. Like if we end up doing some stuff, you can bring your drums. Cause if they bring their fucking drums, they set them up and they leave them for next time. So I literally bought a drum set so that we could have a drum set.
Yeah, you're not
here.
Resetting up the drums.
Yeah, and you're like, oh no, we got a set, man. If you want to bring some cymbals or something in the bag, we got some shit, but let's just, you know, we'll just jam and see what's up.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, oh, you know, I'm busy, you know, and you just kind of fucking, it sucks, dude.
So if you're out there and you ever drummed for Brent and he didn't call you back, you know what's going on.
Yeah. What's up?
There might be a person that was listening. I'm sorry, bro. It's like a relationship. It just doesn't work out sometimes. I'm not fucking great at guitar. I'm sure that happened to me. You know, I probably showed up and jammed with someone and didn't get called back.
That's why I don't play with you.
Yeah. Damn it.
Just as a side note, before we start getting into the real depressive stuff, do you know about the other guitar player, Jason Evermore? Do you guys know about him?
No.
Okay.
He plays guitar.
Jason Evermore was another member of the band that also left right before things really exploded.
Oh, sucks for him.
He was also in Soundgarden for a period of time, I believe. Okay. So he was a part of the Seattle music scene. When he left Nirvana, joins the army. Ends up being a super special forces soldier
and is this super.
Look him up after we're done with this. Jason Evermore, the Nirvana guitar player who has these platinum albums, who is a super soldier off fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq and all this shit.
Is that why you won't show us your ID?
A serious battle.
Is that really you? Is that why?
Fucking Jason Bourne over here. Okay.
Of all of the shit that I've done, I have never been in Nirvana.
Okay.
So he says. So he ends up, they signed with a group called, or with a label called Sound Pop or Sub Pop, and they ended up wanting to leave them because they felt that they were backing groups like Soundgarden, other groups that were on that label. They were putting all of their resources in promotion in these other bands. Nirvana felt like they were getting the shaft and they didn't want to re-sign with them. And in this same era in 1990, it's when he first meets Courtney Love, and they meet at a show in Portland, and they don't really hit it off right away. They just kind of know each other and they meet each other in Portland. But that's when they first meet, and it's years later before they do anything serious. And in 1990, the same year, he ends up touring with Sonic Youth. And they ended up, at this point, they had a different drummer, a guy named Dale Crover, and they kicked him out as well. And then when they were on tour in D.C. is when they met Dave Grohl, and he was playing with a band called Scream in D.C., and he ended up signing on with Nirvana from that point on. And Dave Grohl is obviously still like rock superstar.
Yeah, he is the highest paid drummer in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has the most money.
Huh. So you know, he actually plays everything in Foo Fighters. Like they perform live. Yeah, but when they do the studio,
he plays the drums,
the guitar, he plays all the shit and sings.
He made Foo Fighters and then got guys to play it on stage.
Right, that's crazy.
And that was actually during Nirvana, I think, that he was writing and recording all of that stuff. And then right after Cobain died, then he really...
Pushed it. Yeah, you would have to. Yeah. Yeah. You'd have
I'm adding him to the list.
Right, you're adding him to the list.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, by the way, another show topic is the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Not the band.
The real Foo Fighters.
Yes. The real Foo Fighters of World War II that flew around.
The UFOs.
And pilots saw, yeah.
I don't know about that.
Well, we will one day. So in 91, they signed with Geffen Records, and their first huge album, Nevermind, comes out. That's what Smells Like Teen Spirit is on, and that's where they just fucking explode. Like, that's what, what puts them on the map. That's what, like cements them, sells 10 million copies, et cetera, just pretty much kind of out of nowhere. Like, you just jump to 10 million copies on this one album, and it was just fucking massive.
It's like, I mean, back then... You know, I say this like it's a crazy long time ago, but, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, 20 plus years ago, that's how music was. Like, people, there were other good bands out there. There were other good people out there. But Nirvana, Dave Grohl, you know, Kurt Cobain just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
It's still
doing the right shit.
Demo tape time. Like, we had to fucking send someone your demo tape.
They just happened to be in the right area, like doing the right shit at the right time. And that shit just hit. Like, there was no formula. There was no.
We can give a. This is like back when MTV had teeth. Like, they did a huge put. I remember that video was on fucking constantly. Yeah. Like, MTV, like, made Nirvana.
Before there was, like, four MTVs reality shows.
There were, like, maybe that was the first shitty season of Real World or something, but they actually still were pushing music, and they were a huge
influence. Before MTV killed MTV.
Yeah, exactly, basically.
When I was watching some of this stuff, one of the things that you see over and over again is Kurt Lauder as he's announcing that, that Kurt Cobain's. And I hear Kurt Lauder talk on there, and it just sucks me right back into to the 90s where you have the MTV news and something important.
10 minutes to the hour every hour, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The success like fucking blows up. Everybody thinks he's like one of the best songwriters of his generation. He's got kind of this interesting sound that goes between like being soft and being like hard rock at the same time.
He dates a couple important girls, but between there too, he dated some girl named Tracy Miranda. It was pretty serious. They lived together. Mm-hmm. And she supported him and worked at a cafeteria and would steal food to feed them. Damn. And they lived in an apartment together, and they would sleep into the evenings and then just wake up and like do art that he apparently used his own bodily fluids to make on the back of album covers and fucking cereal boxes and whatever he could have because they had no money. And they would just focus on art and music projects and live together. And he had no job, and she would steal food from the cafeteria that she worked at. But she's now a giant lady. Like, I was like,
she is hefty.
Well, the thing with her though, he said he always wanted to be with somebody he could share creativity with.
Right.
And he liked her, but she wasn't creative. Like, they would go out and do married couple things, like go to the farmer's market or go thrift shopping, you know, or whatever. And so that wasn't in the cards for him, and he knew it, but she would always take care of him. Right. And then they
finally break up, and he had like Bradson kind of a maternal relationship with that girl. Mm-hmm. And he gets with another girl named Toby Vale. She's from a band called Bikini Kill, which sounds like he's moving towards Courtney a little bit more. And she thought that the traditional maternal relationship of like boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, was somehow offensive. Like, she was so punk rock.
She was a feminist.
She didn't want to be the girl. Like, so they were more equal, and they did some music projects together. But the coolest part of him meeting her is he was so into her that when he first met her, he threw up like Stan and fucking Wendy on South Park. He literally saw her, got anxiety, and threw up like on the ground or something. But he threw up
honor.
The
Should
first time he met
that.
Her because of anxiety, because he was so excited to
meet
her.
That's why she started dating him. Yeah. She was like, yeah, that's hardcore. That's punk rock right there.
That's rock right there.
Yeah.
So, and at this point, like, and he's got like a pretty progressive, especially for the time, like, idea of feminism and like equal rights and openness towards homosexuality and all this different stuff. Like, even in, I think
he was gay, but he wasn't gay.
Right.
Like, I mean, he grew up like that.
Even in one, I think it was in the liner notes to one of his albums. He said, quote, "If any of you in any way hate homosexuals, people of different color or women, please do this one favor for us. Leave us alone. Don't come to our shows and don't buy our records."
You know what's funny? I had growing up, one of my good friends, he moved from Oildale. Oildale, where we live, is like kind of a known as being a racist area of town, very white. They didn't allow black people into the area. There used to be a sign. What was the painting on the bridge?
Don't let the sun set on your ass.
inners.
Inward.
Yeah. Naggers.
Yeah.
So like that Snickers. Was there. Yeah. Snickers. Snickers. Yeah. That was there. It's legit.
That's a true story.
It's changed now. But he came to my side of town, my hood. And I lived kind of in the ghetto. There was black people, Mexicans, you know. And
I lived in the oil dough while Brad lived in the ghetto.
Yeah. And so he came over and he was super racist, like eating, you know, swastikas on his binder and like all this crazy shit. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this kid? Never met a fucking black person in his life.
Right.
He listened to Nirvana. Like that was his favorite band.
Right.
I kind of find that ironic now.
Like, yeah. That was in the liner notes. Yeah. And, this was, and actually I ran into this and thought it was an interesting sub fact, but apparently in this same time, Kurt Cobain never listened to hip hop. And apparently I forget who the interview was with, but someone who was in the band with him said that he only ever owned one hip hop album and it was Public Enemy's It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. And I approve of that selection. Just so you know, Dave gives the thumbs up. If you only have one hip hop album and that's it, I don't have a problem with that scenario. But about this time, the band is getting big, et cetera. And this is finally where he starts to get closer to Courtney Love, after these other relationships have ended. So she's the lead singer and the guitarist with Hole. They meet back up at the L7 concert in Los Angeles.
Who's Garbage? What's the band Garbage? What's her name?
Shirley Manson.
No.
Yep.
No.
Yeah, the lead singer for Garbage, Shirley Manson. Yes.
That's a pretty quick answer. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
The producer for Nevermind, a guy named Vig, is the drummer for Garbage as well.
For Garbage. So
there's a pretty big
I love Garbage. They're great, man.
Yeah, they're great.
Fucking Garbage.
Courtney Love was...
they are.
Courtney, at this time, when she meets up with him, he's a project for her. And it's almost like a professional hit where she had this ability. If she wanted to go after someone, she was like this professional con artist and manipulator. So she would figure out and study you and decide, I know that he likes this and he goes to these places and this is the type of gum he chews. And she would then would formulate a plan because there was another guy before Kurt that was an up and coming musician. And at this point,
so she tried to groom him.
So she would groom them. But at this point, she's already a lower level success. Hole's doing pretty good.
Hole wasn't huge, but it was a pretty good. Yeah. I mean, they're on the radio.
They're drawing some crowds. They're playing some festivals. But she had tried to do this with another guy before. But then she meets Kurt, and she's like, "Here's what you need to do. Here's how we're going to make you into a rock star." And that was her project on the way.
Yeah.
And apparently they got connected because she was close friends with a girl named Jennifer Finch, who David Grohl was dating at the time. And that was why they even went to the concert and sort of, and he had known her before, like I said, just
like how you call him David.
Scene.
Everybody else calls him Dave Grohl. You're David Grohl.
Well, he's a David. He's
I'm in the club. Yeah. I'm allowed.
When you know him like Dave
David,
does.
Yeah, that's David right. Barnaby. Right. Yeah. David Barnaby Grohl.
I have to say, it's a weird thing about being like most people I know who are Daves or Davids are very specific, and they get pissed off if you call them the wrong thing, unless you are also a Dave or a David.
Then
like I have multiple friends.
Then you got to call them the other one.
No. You're free to do whichever. Like I have three friends named David who get pissed. Like if someone says, "Oh, Dave," they're like, "No, it's David." But if I call him Dave, they never say a thing.
Is that a
because
metaphor?
I'm a Dave.
Is that a metaphor for being black?
Nope.
That's
no, they're all
really,
white. They're all white.
Okay.
They're all
I was gonna
white.
Say, kids are all white.
That's right.
That guy's all white.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
He's doing all white.
That guy's all white.
Hey, look at that guy. He's all white. Fun fact that was in my notes that I skipped is
well,
the smell,
there.
Smells like a Teen Spirit actually is because when he was dating that Veil girl, she wore Teen Spirit deodorant. And because he was like hanging out with her or something, one of her friends said, "Kurt smells like Teen Spirit." And that's where smells
stuck
like Teen
him.
Spirit came from.
Or was it from the slow girl?
It wasn't. That smells like Dirty Vagina.
Yeah. different that's a different album.
That was a B-side. Yeah.
It's a good one.
That was a B-side.
Nirvana's new hit smells like Dirty Vagina.
So
smells like fish that you shouldn't eat.
Ooh.
They get married in 92.
Fish sticks and tartar
sauce. Sam face. Ooh, if we had video for my piano fingers and Sam face.
It smells like that look smells like he's had it before.
You can't see.
That look, he smelt it. He really smelt it. He knew what it smelled like.
Yeah.
He's been there, man.
Yeah. Yeah, blood's filled with mercury. He's been with a
couple
tuna.
Slow chicks.
Uh-huh. They get married, 1992, and apparently it's not the best relationship in the world. They fight a lot, domestic abuse, like cops being called on them all the time, like a lot of shit. At one point, even once they have their daughter, they ended up having to get investigated by social services because Courtney Love said in an interview that she was doing heroin when she was pregnant.
She admitted, on tape. Yeah. I saw the interviews where
and they would get high together. Well, like, you know,
she denied afterward having admitted it, but they republished it in this Vanity Fair article.
Right.
And when they published it, then they basically took the baby away right away. Yeah. They couldn't be left alone with the child. They had to have supervised visits for the first quite a while.
They had to take drug tests, submit urine samples.
And then they stopped that. And then she calls the police on Kurt Cobain for taking all of this cocktail of drugs, and then they take her away again. And this has happened kind of over and over and over again. It was a big problem for them.
Well, she was on methadone like after giving birth. They said the baby was born with addiction, like that poor kid.
I'm kind of worried. When we get famous, what are we going to turn into?
I don't know. I'm slipping into it slowly.
Well, you're already
I'm
bad.
Pretty sure whiskey and invisible pianos and pigeons is involved.
Probably.
I'm not at a place where I can afford a $500 a day heroin habit.
No, nor can I. Yeah.
I wouldn't pick so much so peanut butter. I'm not going for heroin, though. What are you going for? What drug are you doing?
Peanut butter and whiskey.
Peanut. That's not a drug.
Hey, man, it's each their own. Tell me two chicks at the same time. Peanut butter and whiskey, man. It's
I want here. A $500 so a day dollar habit.
What's that? Simple, you eat a dollar? You're going to eat a dollar.
No, like I just get $500 a day. Like I'm addicted to getting $500.
There is that, though. There is that. There is that. There people, they were talking about some like famous people. They know they have friends or whatever that their thing is to get up in the morning and look at their bank account.
Right.
And see what they have and track what they have. Like that's their thing. And I was like, that's fucking boring.
Yeah,
like, but that's their, boring. That is their hobby. Yeah. Like to see how much money they can accumulate. They don't fucking spend any of it.
Yeah.
That is their fucking game. You know, everybody, you play fucking Candy Crush on your phone while somebody's on their computer seeing how much fucking O's they can get.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Like that's crazy, but that is a thing.
Yeah.
People do that shit.
I'd rather do that than heroin.
Me too. I'm taking.
So in 93, they release In Utero, like the album that's probably the most acclaimed of all their albums. And long about this point, he starts to get more depressed. He starts to do even more heroin. And apparently he starts to like drive wedges between himself and other members of the band, and they start to grow more distant. I vividly remember like when they did Unplugged. Like I remember that happening for the first time on MTV. It was really when Unplugged blew up because Nirvana did it. And apparently it almost never happened because he and Dave Grohl weren't getting along and it was hard to convince him to go to New York and do the show.
Well, there was a big thing with that too, that the media was really showing, they were only interested in his depression. Like when he had bad moments, they would show that when he wasn't doing well or he was down, they would show that. When they did the Unplugged, they didn't show the uncut version. They showed the cut because that's where all he was kind of down and you know, they were fighting and stuff and that's what they showed.
But also it was kind of his shtick too. And that's what they say on the back end when they're trying to say he was murdered, that he wasn't really depressed, that was just his shtick. He wasn't really depressed, but he wanted all the people to think that because that was the persona that he was trying to put out
there.
And
it's also the media was saying that.
And the media would say that too.
Yeah.
But when you really, when you look at what his friends would say about him and stuff, there are as many people who said, I knew him and I was a close friend with him and the guy was having a hard time.
Yeah.
Right.
As there are the people that say, oh no, he was always fine.
Right.
Yeah. And to me, when you think about the people that you know that guy that's having a really shitty time, but you're also probably not going to go say, so-and-so, I was kind of having a shitty time over there.
Well, but the other thing is like, a lot of people in my family suffer from manic depression, clinical depression. I myself suffer from clinical depression. I know a lot of people who are depressed, and if they end up talking to just a regular fucking Joe on the street, they're not going to know that person's depressed. Like when you really know them, you're like, oh fuck, I think this person's depressed.
Yeah, I have depression. Yeah, you know, I think everybody has a lot of,
when I tell people that I have depression, a lot of people are like, you don't. Really? Like you're always happy.
But that's inherent in that particular disorder that he had is half of the time you're as happy.
So he was probably bipolar.
Think about sad. Robin Williams. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's sure. The perfect example of like, holy shit, anything you ever saw was the highest of highs. Yeah.
So does that mean they're bipolar? Is that what that
I think
mean?
that's what his situation yeah. was.
It did but say bipolar. Yeah,
it's manic depressive. Right. It's bipolar where you alternate back and forth.
And I think that's a cycle. I think that's a common thing though. I think people who are depressed at certain points, you are bipolar because I'm the same. I'm not on the super crazy low end of it, but I get sad for no reason. I feel like, you know, you get those times where you're like, nobody cares about me. You know, I don't even know why I'm here. You don't have a purpose. Right. And Kurt Cobain even said that when he was young, he would do that. And he created a thing where he was an alien from outer space, you know, and he was left here to try and figure out his purpose.
Kind of like P-Funk.
Yeah. Exactly like P-Funk. So I think those were his father's.
That's right.
But he was left here to try and figure out a purpose. And he said he knew that was kind of like just a thing that he made up, you know, but he thought it was fun and it was creative. And that's the way his brain worked. But he needed, you know, to feel like somebody needed him because his parents didn't need him, you know, and going through your whole life like that, like if you have... like women with daddy issues, you know what I mean? You see all this shit play out in people's lives that shit will fuck you up, you know, like, and it's not a game to those people. To other people that see it, they're like, it's whatever.
Not a big deal. Yeah.
But to that person, like, you're like, why would you fucking kill yourself over that stupid little thing? You know, but to that person, it is the realest, you know, most fucking deep depressing and thing is, they can come up with.
I would also argue that it's never that little thing. It's like saying that, you know, why did you get a divorce? Yeah. It's like, oh, because I never put the toilet seat down. Bull fucking shit.
Yeah.
It's because you and your wife fucking hated each other.
Yeah.
And you got a massive fight about the toilet seat. Like there were it's very an underlying deep issue. Set, yeah. You know,
well, so. And even with him, if you were starting out with this just basic depression, this clinical depression that he was diagnosed with, and then if that's your baseline, and you're using that as a backdrop for all of the shit that all of the sudden was going wrong in his life. And we're not quite there yet, but when you get to this spot that the podcast's about with the conspiracy and whatnot, you know, he's going to get divorced because he can't put the toilet seat down. They keep taking away his baby. And his wife says, if you don't stop doing heroin, you're never going to see her again. And his band says, if you don't stop heroin, we're kicking you out of the band.
Right.
And he's got this chronic stomach problem that's making him sick. And all of this shit's closing in on him all
not to
of
mention,
a sudden.
I mean, obviously, no one in this room understands the pressures of that kind of fame, the pressures of record label and all this shit. Like, when's your next hit coming out? When's your next fucking album? Like, everywhere you go, a million people want you to sign their
fame. Fame was a brick wall. Yeah. Like, and I started to try to imagine, I was like, God, what happens when you get to the top? The only way is down.
Yeah.
Like, nothing's ever going to get cooler or
look
better.
Every celebrity that's on the fucking Celebrity Fit Club.
You're going to get old and ugly and poor. Like,
look at Gary Coleman. You know what I mean? Like they go from this stardom, like it doesn't matter if they're a kid or they're an adult, they go from this spot in stardom to fucking
to time
rock
traveling
fucking
murderers.
Bottom. Yeah. Yes.
And he was embarrassed by it. Courtney went out and bought a really expensive fancy car and he like talked her into taking it back because he was embarrassed by the fame. Because
he was still kind of that. I mean,
if he went and bought a new pair of pants at JCPenney, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Even though he's making millions and millions and millions.
Yeah.
Duff McKagan was interviewed from Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
He was interviewed in one of the...
they were on a plane together, right?
Right. Well, the plane flight that he took when he left Exodus, and we haven't even got to this far yet. Ironically, Duff McKagan, had this terrible heroin problem, is sitting next to him in first class as he's flying back from LA to Seattle. And they were talking about, you know, the depression and a little bit about the drugs and whatnot. But McKagan was saying, people don't understand if you come from this regular life and all of a sudden you have all this money, he says that rock stars have a joke that they're going to go buy this multi-million dollar house that's going to have 10 rooms and they're going to camp out and they're going to live in one.
Right.
Yeah, right.
They're going to live in this one room and they're going to buy a TV and set it on the box and they're going to eat their pizza out of this one room. And
Howard Hughes did the fucking same thing. You know, like they go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So long about this time, he ends up like a big incident happens in Rome. So when he's in Rome, this is on March 4th of 93, he's in a hotel room And again, the reports vary.
It's very conflicting. Yeah.
Very conflicting. Some people claim this was an attempt of suicide. A lot of pills.
Courtney claims he took 50 Rohypnol and drank champagne. The doctor does not corroborate that story.
Collaborate.
No, not collaborate.
I concur.
And listen.
Ice is back with a brand new image. Wow. Something grabbed holding me tightly. Flow like a harpoon daily and nightly. I have to do it. I have no choice. So basically the doctor says it was not a suicide attempt. There was not that many pills.
Right.
They did.
Well, I mean, we talked about this before the show too. Courtney Love was a fucking liar. You know what I mean? She fabricated stories. She, you know, did all kinds of crazy shit.
You can listen to recordings of her when she's talking to her private investigator, where she's saying, "What if I make up this story, or what if I say this?"
And she does.
This
it. Will she help calls sell the records news and plants.
And
a
she
theme.
Makes yeah. shit up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like I said, she was this master manipulator, and she was always thinking about how I can make something up or spin a story to sell more records or to put myself in a good light.
She left a story. She planted a seed of a story that she had attempted suicide when she fucking didn't, because she thought it might supposedly allegedly make Kurt feel guilty and be like, "Oh, I'm worried about her. Yeah. She's actually in the hospital. She tried to attempt suicide." And then she says, "And on the upside, I'll sell more albums because any publicity is good publicity." Yeah.
Right. The thing in Rome, they were saying he was depressed because she was off in the States with Billy Corgan at that exact same time.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. So like, there was this thing. So
they were smashing
because
pumpkins
of that.
Together.
Yeah. They were smashing their pumpkins.
Well, so in Rome, what he's taking is Rohypnol, which is
the date rape drug. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
which is
so
a thing.
Is
people still take it.
Ultimate downer. It's used to treat sleep disorders and whatnot.
Yeah.
But he would say afterwards that he didn't ever remember taking it. And when the conspiracies really start talking about Courtney's involvement in perhaps his death, this was the first attempt on his life.
But she called the police and called the hospital and saved him. So why?
Right.
Why?
But that's the question. Yeah. Because what they say though is that those Rohypnols, they come in a blister pack where they're one at a time, and that nobody was going to sit there and open up 50 different pills.
Yeah.
And they speculate that if she did it, that she ground them up and put them in his champagne and he drank.
Realize.
Well, the other thing is,
but the doctors don't corroborate the story. So it's,
I would imagine that would taste like Malort though.
Yeah.
But you,
it would be bitter as fuck. Yeah.
But you would also have to call. I mean, if you were trying to kill him and you gave him all those fucking pills, you would have to call the cops. Like you, I mean,
oh my gosh, he's dying.
Well, as soon as you think it's like to the point of no return, you call the cops.
She's the one who calls the cops in the end.
The other thing too, people who take those pills, I have a guy I work with, and he goes home and he'll call me for a job or something, and I'll call him back and he won't ever remember.
Should
from
you
the
tell
time
this story?
Who's gonna?
He didn't say it was John.
A guy I work with narrows it the fuck down.
He doesn't work at my company, and it doesn't matter. Anyway.
A guy I work with. Okay.
I work with a lot of guys.
All right.
I mean, at that place.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. But anyway, anywho,
you do a lot of stuff with a lot of guys.
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff. Yeah, yeah. Peanut butter is involved. You know,
stone inspections.
Yeah,
that was
stone
me.
Inspections. Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot about some good stones.
Yep.
But no, he would literally be like, I don't remember calling you. Like, he's like, I took a Ambien or something. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, and he's like, after I take that, like, I don't remember anything. Yep. Like, I don't remember I don't even remember taking it. Like, he's like, and I'm like, damn, that's fucking insane. Yep. Like that, but that's if you have a sleep disorder, you either deal with that, Brent. You know, you need to take that, or, you know, it's what it is.
So that was in March 4th of 93, the thing in Rome. And then on March 18th, back in Seattle, Courtney Love ends up calling and saying that he's suicidal. He's locked himself into the closet with guns and medication. The cops end up showing up and looking into it and so forth. So that's in March. And then in April is when the deed comes down. So he ends up going to a rehab center in Marina Del Rey in Los Angeles.
They have an intervention. He gets fucking pissed, but he ends up going to rehab anyway.
Right. And he's supposed to go for 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, I think it was even longer than that. But backing up just a little bit, it's important to talk about this incident where she calls the police on him, because she calls the police who come to investigate this domestic dispute.
Right.
And she tells them he's being suicidal.
And he locked himself in the room.
He says he's not, and they take the guns. That's why he ultimately ended up needing another gun, because this was the second time that they'd taken those guns, because back in June of 93, mm-hmm. the year before, she had also called him and yeah. said he's it causing seems like troubles, she, and they confiscated his guns.
He told the police right. he was locked right. away from her, though.
Probably. Allegedly. Like, this is right. fucking, like, it sounds like she's almost she's doing something. This shit on purpose. Right. Like, she's just right. doing it on purpose.
But this is where they say she first publicly planted the suicidal thing, because she hadn't mentioned the suicide with Rome. Later, she comes back and says, oh, yeah, there was even a suicide note.
And the media is such a powerful thing. Once yeah. you plant that seed and it gets out there and widespread, it is truth.
Yeah. Right.
People
right.
just right. take it as truth. Right.
Yeah. Whether somebody comes back there's and no says no or not. Yeah. yeah. Once
the
it's out there, it's out there.
Is
yeah.
never what's yeah. paid
Paula Deen. Paula Deen yeah. ain't on Cooking Channel no more. What right. happened to Paula Deen?
right.
She hates black people.
Right.
Like, that's just how it is.
So in
Dave's angry. Do you see that face?
He did.
Sorry.
Fuck Paula Deen.
Yeah, he was fucking pissed off.
I just don't like her because nothing she cooks is vegan. So. Mm.
And they sold her stuff in Walmart. That made him even more mad.
Oh, yeah.
Pots and pans.
Fuck.
White ladies.
Fucking white ladies.
She had Q-tip hair, too.
She looked like the Chupacabra lady.
Yeah. yeah. So the... Allegedly, so he ends up going to this rehab center.
Exodus.
He's only there for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And apparently one morning he was joking Exodus. About how fucking sketchy it would be to try to climb over this wall and escape.
This is an open door facility. Right. You can walk out the front door. yeah. You are not well, locked
this,
down.
And that this goes to his personality.
Right.
Like, yes, you can walk out, but why would he do that? He would have to do something, write fucking doobadaba, whatchamacallit on the wall. You
said
know,
he goes...
Like,
out the back window right. and climbs yeah. this 9
climbs
foot
a sketchy wall.
Wall.
Yeah.
He said he walked out for a cigarette and then yeah, scaled a 6 foot wall and got yeah. a taxi cab.
But he would like to pretend that he would escape from places like when he was young. You know, it probably took him back to when he was a kid. You know,
but one other thing about before he goes to this rehab that again he was only really in for 2 days. He went because they had gotten these ultimatums from Courtney Love and from the band. If you don't fix this problem, it's all going to end.
Right.
Well, he's got this sort of paranoid thing going on that he feels that he's telling people someone keeps breaking into the or trying to break into the house or there's stalkers or there are people coming around the house and I need a gun. Yeah. So he talks Dylan Carlson, who was his best friend or his heroin buddy,
right.
yeah.
Into getting him a shotgun. So the day before he is to go into Exodus, he and Dylan go to this store and he puts it into Dylan's name so the police won't take it away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's this 20 gauge shotgun the day before he's supposed to go to rehab.
Right.
As he's driving to the rehab, he realizes, oh shit, I still have the shotgun shells in my bag that I just bought. And he gives them to his driver and says, hey, take these back to my house. I can't take them on an airplane with me.
Yeah.
Okay. So now he's going to rehab and we have this shotgun in play and we have these shells in the car. So then we get back to jumping out of the or climbing the wall.
Right.
Yeah. It's just setting. It's just like setting right. a scene. You
Guns
know?
And right. Roses. Yeah. yeah, that's where yeah. the Guns and Roses talk happens on that plane ride back.
Right.
Right. Right. So, yeah, so he's exactly. flying back with Duff McKagan, and when people will talk later on about how he wasn't depressed, Duff McKagan talks about how he and his buddy shows up to pick him up, and he said we actually had a conversation about whether we should pack him up and bring him home with us because he seemed so down.
Right.
So oh, McKagan wow. said.
He hates Guns N' Roses and yeah. Axl Rose, though. He Apparently. Hated Axl Rose, yeah. yeah. Allegedly.
Motherfucker still had the headband on, yeah. too. He was like, yeah. wouldn't take it off. That's what he was depressed about, mm-hmm. that he wouldn't take it off.
Stepping on his hair.
That might have been the whole problem.
Yeah. 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 He was upset about the hairband.
This is about the time where she then hires her private investigator.
Right. So in the day he jumps the wall, Courtney Love hires her private investigator named Tom Grant. And I didn't see, I heard references to recorded conversations between her and Tom Grant, but
yeah,
I didn't
he
see
actually,
a whole lot
yeah. And he actually has there's a documentary that he did, which is the one, I think you watched that one, the
Soaked in Bleach.
Soaked yeah. in Bleach. Yeah.
And he's got a website that's called yeah. CobainCase.com. It's a little
you
bit,
can go there.
It's a little bit GeoCities, yeah. but it's, you know,
it actually well, has a link you can click on yeah. it. And he goes, they were supposed to go to rehab together. And then they couldn't get along. So Courtney went one way and Kurt went another way. when he goes to Exodus, then she checks into this hotel as a detox. I'm going to live in this hotel. I'm not going to leave my room. They're going to just bring me room service, blah, blah, blah.
That shit ain't going to
They
work.
Said that she was stoned the whole time she was there.
He showed up. She was half naked with a drug dealer.
Right. So Easter, she realizes that Kurt has skipped away out of this rehab, and she starts calling around to private investigators. And she gets a hold of Tom Grant.
He happens to answer
who happens
phone.
To be working that day in his office. He was meeting with someone. Tom Grant shows up, and the first thing she says when he opens up the door is, if you leak this to the press, I'll fucking sue the shit out of you.
Right.
Okay. Nice. So right off the bat, he's kind of taken aback a little bit.
Right.
And then he goes in, and like he said, she's half naked. She's got her groupies there. She's appears to be stoned. And he right away starts getting a creep factor about him, according to him. So from like that moment on, he literally records every second Everything. That he speaks,
which is
according
smart.
To Love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you go to his website, you can listen to those recordings.
Those recordings.
And they are crazy shit.
She says some sketchy shit. Yeah.
He did receive a cease and desist from her because of the documentary and everything. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what exactly it did because it's still out there. Like you say, you put something on the internet and fucking it's
right.
there.
Yeah.
So,
there's no taking that back. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's.
Well, they're all in the documentary too. So,
yeah.
He seems reputable. He's an ex police officer. I think his dad was a police officer.
Yeah.
He finally quits the force and starts the private investigation company. You know, he said, I think that was the only time he had ever flipped on a client where he was like, well, wait a minute. This seems like I'm investigating the wrong fucking
bitch. I have hard times with Tom Grant.
Yeah.
Do you?
And Rosemary, her lawyer. I mean, lawyer the whole time is talking to Tom Grant in the background. I think that she killed him. I think that she did all this bad stuff. This is her lawyer and he's recording it now. It's
he's like,
there.
Oh my
it's an ethical
God.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but
you hear
Tom
that part
Grant,
where she's like, wait, are you recording this? He's like, yeah. She's like, shit. And just hangs up.
So I guarantee you, though, this guy had dollar signs in his eyes the minute he started recording.
He's like, I'm tired of doing this.
Yeah, and I just got fucking rolled in with
Courtney
Love and Kurt Cobain.
I just got Willy Wonka's gold fucking ticket. Yeah,
he didn't know who she was when the original
I own
call
the
came in. His assistant was like, look at this fucking magazine. Like, that's who that fucking is you're talking to right now. Like, look, this is this person. Yeah.
This whole fucking Nirvana just overshined her.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So the facts that we know are that on April 5th, 1994, Kurt Cobain had a massive amount of heroin in his system.
Anytime you say any date from April followed by 1990, anything, I immediately hear Sublime lyrics every fucking time. I don't know what it is. I'm ruined.
Yeah, you're retarded.
April 26th, 1992. There was a riot on the street. Tell me, where were you? That's all I fucking hear. Anytime in the podcast we ever say April anything. Okay. I'm just pointing that out. I don't know. Piano fingers, shoe the pigeon, peanut butter, move along.
Yeah, so you're making it worse on yourself there.
So the facts that
I gotta
are
have
known,
an image, right?
The facts that are known about his death is he has a massive amount of heroin in his system, allegedly an amount that's three times more than you would need in order to overdose.
Unless you do heroin all the time.
They even said if you did heroin all the time, it was still.
I heard it was 10 times more than a normal heroin addict and 70 times more than would kill the average person. I don't know. Was it something like that? Is that high?
Well, what I read most of the time is three times the lethal limit.
That's what I
kind of the
reading.
Terminology right. that yeah. they use. But that again is a really, really awkward way to look at it because. You can't ever
It's not based
compare.
Off a real toxicology right. report either. Yeah.
Nobody has the toxicology report.
Right.
I never saw anything from anyone who got to look at the autopsy or the toxicology report. So all of this is a little bit conjecture, but we're not dealing with anybody that you can pretend to think of as normal. When you're studying heroin addicts, very seldom are you studying $500 a day heroin addict.
Yes, that's true.
He that had been doing true. A lot of heroin for a really, really long time.
Long time. Right. So half his life.
I even read it in 93, he had a fucking overdose.
Yeah.
And the next day
did
a full day of press and a show.
And, right. and
that's how much heroin.
Man, he really looked depressed too when he did that show. You know,
but here's the thing. He would shoot up and get all crazy and most people go into a coma.
Yeah.
He would go out and do a concert, right. and you've seen what Kurt Cobain concerts look like.
Yeah, yeah.
So he could function on a certain level.
Yeah.
Now, the biggest problem I have with all the conspiracies is that heroin level, because the problem with it is when you inject heroin, you have about 40 to 60 seconds before it really, really hits you.
You see the movie stereotypical,
like they hit
roll
and then
back, lay down.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Within 40 to 60 seconds, the amount of heroin that he had in his system, according to the reports, without anybody seeing any actual reports, right, he would have had to shoot up three times.
But that there was no drug kit around.
There was.
It was
his jug box was there, but it was all cleaned up and put away.
And right, he had Valium in the system.
Right. He had Valium in there. But that's what you're talking about is basically taking the spoon, putting the smack on it, lighting it up, syringing it out, wrapping yourself up and shooting up three times.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so that assumes that he really had as much as they said or whatnot. And I don't know without actually having the autopsy. Right. Yeah. But and that's the hardest part of it for me. I can see around almost everything else.
Yeah. So if we assume that he really did have that amount, the argument is he couldn't actually functionally hold the shotgun and perform the actions he needed to do.
But
and he took enough to die. Like it's not like
Why are you doing that?
Yeah, why are you doing a violent act of shooting yourself and overdosing on heroin and Valium?
Right.
It was weird.
The other thing too, though, I mean, and like you said, with the how much you could take, like alcoholics, they'll find somebody with alcohol in their system that's like, damn, that should have killed them.
Right.
Well, I see it all
what's
the time.
Yeah, what's the...
I had friends that took 40 what's your Vicodin. Level?
Yeah, 40 Vicodin. What's your level?
10 would probably kill me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's just, nobody has... Everybody's different, so...
The other thing they cite with the heroin thing is that there's almost no incidence of someone taking heroin and then committing suicide with a gun.
Right.
That generally, you're so subdued and relaxed that
rare.
At best... Take more heroin to die.
Yeah.
You don't need to shoot yourself.
Well, it's the reason you take heroin because it gets rid of those
thoughts and the pains and whatnot. But he also, if you really look through all of this, he's kind of planning himself up and he's working himself up to this. If he's buying a shotgun, making sure the shells are at home,
he
and all of this stuff is going on.
Contacted the attorney to remove Courtney from the will.
Uh huh.
And
so he told him he wanted a divorce.
Yep.
He told his friends he wanted a divorce. Bad things are happening, and he's either going to get her out by divorcing her, or he's going to get her out by taking her out of the will.
That's something too, though. The divorce thing. Well, the divorce thing, though. The investigator, he actually had it where Courtney wanted the divorce, not Kurt.
I haven't seen
and
that.
He had stuff where Kurt.
That's against her motive, because if she gets a divorce, the prenuptial stays valid.
Yeah, but this is
and
this,
she doesn't get any money.
She had recorded stuff where she was talking about it, and then also Kurt talking about it that Courtney wants the divorce, and then also
she gets like little to no money if she gets divorced, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that's if he dies, she inherits like $1 billion. Potentially, $1 billion.
Yes, I mean that's where I mean there's all kinds of conflicts.
Right.
I mean even in the and suicide then, note, like we
said, so what about the note? So the suicide note was addressed to Bodda, Bodda, which
Bodda was Bodda, his childhood imaginary friend
that he considered to be the evil part of his psyche, basically. Right.
Which kind of shows it
wasn't really a suicide note. There was almost nothing about
the whole
top of this.
Yeah.
It was almost just like his regular journal ramblings. And then at the very bottom, there's almost in a different size print, a little bit more awkwardly, like two
something
lines
was added
of,
to it.
I'm sorry. I want you to move on with your life and be happy and
keep going.
Yeah.
All the
and that was the only stereotypical suicide stuff.
But, and the attorney presented the private investigator with Courtney's backpack that was allegedly left at her house that had a practice sheet of the alphabet in Kurt's handwriting inside of her backpack.
Isn't that nice of your lawyer to pass that shit on to your
There was another thing that kind of caught my attention that on the suicide note, like tell the daughter I love her, blah, 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 blah. Well, in one of his conversations, he was talking about his childhood and how his dad didn't want to be with him, did kind of just left him. And he said that he hated him for that. And that he would never, if he had kids, he would never, ever, ever do that to a kid. He would try and do everything in his power to be there for that kid, And then you see this whole other side as he's older and he has a kid where those actions aren't played out, like he kills himself. Like that's the ultimate not being there for that kid, I mean, I know people change,
and
but
he said holding
I just
his daughter
pattern.
Was the most powerful drug in the world.
Yeah,
is what you're saying.
Yeah, there was all these things that led up to like, and then he killed himself. So every fucking thing he said about being there for his kid and like you said, holding his daughter like that made him happy.
You only got to get crazy for 30 seconds. So
true.
If you're bipolar,
everything you know about suicide though says that that's not really something that he could overcome.
Right. You know, true. Yeah.
With a true mental health problem like
that. I mean, if you're going to kill yourself, you're going to kill yourself. Like there's nothing that
there
can stop
you. There are a couple of other conspiracy things that are important. When Courtney hires Tom Grant, she sends Tom Grant up to Seattle. My husband's missing. He ditched rehab. And Tom Grant goes and finds Cobain's best friend, who was Dylan Carlson, and they go to their house.
Right.
And they're supposed to be looking around the house for the shotgun to get it away so he can't hurt himself or to find Kurt.
Right.
Rosemary, this attorney, later on says, I heard Courtney tell Dylan to tell you to look in the greenhouse, which is where he was found.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody even goes to the greenhouse. Tom Grant acts like he doesn't even know that it exists. And they don't find him for 2 days later until the electrician that Courtney then calls and says, I need some work done in the house. Could you go put these lights up in the greenhouse?
Randomly, what security system
and then,
or something.
Then this electrician goes to the house.
Finds
and
him
he
dead.
Sees him in there. And they call the paramedics, and the paramedics break the glass and open the door.
Which was some conflicting shit.
Which was some conflicting shit because they said he was barricaded in there.
And the electrician says that it looked like he was sleeping. There was some blood coming out of his ear. I'm like, damn, that's a 20-gauge shotgun to your chin. Like, there should be some fucking Kennedy shit going on.
Yeah,
I shot grapefruits and
Nicolas
shit with a 20-gauge.
Face off.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. That's,
and they said there's blood coming out of his ear. You know what I mean? That's... You don't mistake those two. And that's not even in the conspiracy that like the wound, that's not even part of it. Also that they entered, someone said, oh, he locked himself in. He must have done it, but it's just a turn lock that you can pull shut.
You turn and pull shut behind you.
They're saying a chair or a stool was blocking the door, but it was actually another set of double doors on the side, not that door. There's a bunch of conflicting shit. A lot of ridicule comes on to the private investigator for the fact that he went and searched a whole house.
And he's
a private
investigator. Didn't go to this place.
Didn't go to this
good,
place.
Good PI.
PI can't find him, but electrician.
Everybody knows the dead body's in the shed or the basement.
Yeah, to his defense, it's rainy, it's the middle of the night, it's unfamiliar. A third party went back and tried to check, and they also said they didn't see the greenhouse. Yeah. And he's with the fucking best friend.
Yeah.
Is there any other place to look? No, he leaves. So, of course, he didn't know the greenhouse. Yeah. He didn't fucking know that shit's there. It looks like a garage. You can't tell that there's
anything. And he's like, I don't want to find this fool's dead body. Like, I don't want to be involved in this.
It had like a floodlight or something on it. You couldn't see above because it was raining and shit. It was above the garage.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick.
Oh, I was going to say, did you guys hear about Eldon Hoke?
Mm-mm. Yes. Eldouche?
Yeah, Eldouche. Eldon Hoke was the lead singer of a group called The Mentors.
Oh, yes, yes.
And he alleged that Courtney Love offered him $50,000 to kill Kurt Cobain.
Passed a lie detector.
Damn.
Yep. Passed a lie detector.
Passed a lie detector. A lie detector.
Says he knew who did it.
He knows who did it. It was a guy named Alan.
What about Alan?
Yeah, people think it was a guy, like based on that, they think it might be a guy who called himself Alan Wrench, horrible name, from a band called Road Warrior.
And then quickly corrects himself and says, my friend.
It's really funny because he's saying, I know who did it. You should talk to, and he accidentally says Alan.
Yeah.
Well, that's to a documentarian who's making this documentary called Kurt and Courtney.
Kurt and Courtney. Yeah. Nick Broomfield is making
what happens 2 days later?
2 days later.
He's drinking with Alan.
Yeah. And Eldon Hoke fucking gets run over by a train.
Oh, shit.
2 days later, after saying Alan might have killed Kurt Cobain,
He's hanging out with Alan drinking.
Hooks up with a train.
And gets hit with a train. Which I thought was funny after you said that Kurt Cobain tried to kill himself on a train. It all kind of comes around here. That was some. I read that stuff. I was like, that's some fucking sketchy shit.
That's right.
Well, this is like, you know, we were talking about the shotgun thing, you know, and there's some conflicting stories about the shotgun. You're like, no, well, when you pull the trigger, this happens. Like everything looks legit with the shotgun, but that motherfucker could have been so spun out on heroin. Somebody just pops it. And it does what it does, you know, and everything looks good.
So the shell casing's on the wrong side based off the facing of the shotgun. There's something called a cadaveric spasm or something like that, right?
Yeah, the way he was gripping it, he was holding onto it like he did it. And they say that the instant of death, you have this spasm that happens. That's why he was holding it and that it was frozen.
Yeah, you're going to freeze. Yeah.
Right. But
it takes a second. And Sam and I, there's a 20-gauge shotgun here. And as we were walking in the studio, Sam put it on the ground and tried and let it flip.
It flips, yeah.
It flips.
It flips right over. Yeah. So I have
and we're some fucking podcast guys in the basement. Like,
if you work with firearms at all, it's almost crazy, crazy shit happens with bullets and guns.
Oh, yeah.
They do crazy, crazy shit. And it's really, really difficult to
showcase it could
reproduce
bounce.
Stuff.
Yeah, it could bounce back
shotgun
off.
Shotgun shells are light and they flip flop and bounce all over the fucking place.
Yeah. Sure. Like how football, how football shooting, rules all super all crazy. Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, and that's kind of a big thing that they talk about a lot, in the grand scheme of things, the shape and position of the gun and where the shell lands, to me,
doesn't even
is
matter.
Inconsequential.
Yeah, it
doesn't matter.
One of the big things, you know, the people who take the most heat in this case are the Seattle Police Department.
Yeah.
Because they basically walked in and said, oh, you know, she called, reported that he was suicidal. Looks like he killed himself. He must have killed
they
himself
let the
almost
patrol
right away.
Officers make the decision.
The patrol officers made the call.
They're like, is he dead? Suicide?
They
cool.
took all these crime scene pictures. Down. They didn't develop these pictures until like last year.
Yeah, 2014, I think.
Right. Okay. So a couple years ago.
Yeah.
They, because they said, oh, we don't need to because we already know it's a suicide.
They didn't run prints off the rifle. Yeah. They didn't run prints off the fucking.
They ran these prints off the rifles like months later.
I think it was a month. Later.
Yeah. And so, if it was rainy, there was probably some sort of shoe prints, like multiple,
the problem,
you know what
was
I mean? Like
that the media found out about this almost instantly. Have you heard about how the media found out about this?
Mm-mm.
The electrician goes in and he says, there's a dead body in here. What does Kurt Cobain look like? And he calls back to his supervisor and says, what does Kurt Cobain look like? And his supervisor says,
like long hair.
Talk to somebody, he's got whatever, long, straight blonde hair, skinny guy. I think this is Kurt Cobain. Supervisor hangs up the phone, calls the local rock station and says, I have got a big story for you guys. You're going to owe me concert tickets for a long fucking time.
Fuck.
He says, you're going to owe me concert tickets for the long time. And the radio station calls the police and says, do you have reports of something happening at Kurt Cobain's house? And they said, all we can say is that there was a body found. And they ran with the story. And I believe his mother and his sister both heard right as soon as they
found it on MTV News.
On the fucking radio or MTV News.
Kurt Loder here with your MTV News update.
So what happens is almost instantaneously, this house is just overrun by reporters,
media,
people and whatnot.
And speaking of Kurt's mom, Courtney filed a missing persons report under
her
name.
In Rosemary's name.
To make some shady shit, yeah.
That's crazy.
Which makes it look like, and there was tons of news stuff like Cobain's mother reports, blah, 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 says he's suicidal. None of that happened. Courtney placed those fucking reports.
I don't dispute that he had suicidal thoughts or, you know, talked about it because he talked about it. With all this shit, like, I don't know, man.
Here's the thing. I don't know if he killed himself or not, but I know that there's enough sketchy shit in there because there's a whole lot of just fucking naysayers that are
maybe
like,
they
no,
just
he
allowed
did kill himself. Like there wasn't like just fucking flat out
depressed.
End of discussion.
He killed himself.
And it's like, it's not that fucking cut and dry. There's a lot of fucking evidence.
Yeah.
Maybe they knew he's suicidal and it would benefit them. So they just allowed the conditions to progress. Like, oh, help him buy a shotgun.
Yeah. Cause
make
he
sure he gets some heroin, let him do this thing. And then they allowed it. And, you know, so, cause there's that note on the stairs from the ex-boyfriend fucking house.
I don't,
the next day that appears the second time they go back to the house.
I think they fucking killed him. Like, I mean, there's too much.
She claims there was a note from him under her pillow and they had already checked the fucking pillow the night before. So that note that she was
you can't like anything that Courtney has said needs to just be like
fucking
put somewhere. Like, disregarded fucking.
You can't give and take though. You got to take some what she said for proof. You can't take it to deny the other.
There's enough other stuff without what her saying anything.
Right.
You can completely ignore anything she says and still have enough evidence
to
go
fucking
one way
Alan.
Or the other.
You know what I mean? Like you have fucking these guys that a guy dies, you know, once they start fucking talking about names.
2 days after.
Here's another El Duce kind of thing. When she calls the police, one of these times she says, send out Detective Terry. Or she knew someone that was Antonio Terry, one of the detectives. And there's some conjecture about whether she had a relationship with him or whether she was a snitch for him in the heroin business or whatnot. In June of 94... Detective Antonio Terry was murdered, and he was the first Seattle Police Department officer killed in the line of duty in 9 years after being involved. I mean,
fuck.
You know, maybe there's a connection, maybe there's
she's
a not.
Like
but this is the one that
Black
she
Widow,
knew.
Man. Yeah.
This is the one that she knew and
talked to and
talked
had a connection
to and
with,
requested.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's
I didn't read that.
So the real
one.
Thing
that's
is, did you guys see the video that proved that Kurt Cobain was still alive?
No.
Oh, that's everything. Yeah. He's on Tupac Island.
I kept seeing all this stuff, like, because all the fucking clickbait articles were like, is Kurt Cobain really alive? And like pointing to this fucking video. And I'm like waiting for some like video of some dude who's 50 and walking around and looks like Kurt Cobain. It's some fucking guy.
It's 27.
On
a Segway.
No, it's on a Peruvian version of like America's Got Talent.
Oh,
and a fucking guy comes out that is not fucking Kurt Cobain, who
which
says,
is weird because he works
and his name
resort
is listed as Kurt Cobain. Like when he comes out,
oh, that's his
got
performance
hair,
name.
Yeah. Looks nothing like him and does like a bad cover of Kurt Cobain. I was like, are you kidding me right now? Yeah, yeah,
that's pretty
weak. So
that's great.
I don't know.
You wasted like fucking 5 minutes of your life.
Yeah, I sure did.
You won't get that back.
No, dude. I won't get it back.
I was mostly pissed off out of all of this because, you know, he had these identity issues and he always felt like he was way too skinny and scrawny and whatnot. And his first girlfriend that was kind
Tracy,
of mothering him, Tracy and whatnot, she said that he hated the way he looked so much that he would wear a pair of pants with the holy pair of jeans over the top of them and then a shirt with another flannel shirt and
like
another
five shirts
to hide himself and make himself look bigger. So all of these years, I'm fucking dressed up in all of this grunge flannel shit thinking it's cool. And it was just because Kurt Cobain hated the way
he was small.
Looked.
He's like, what can I use to make myself look bigger? That flannel's pretty
another
thick.
Flannel. Right. How about another flannel?
How about three flannels?
Tie one around my waist too.
Yeah, make my ass look
might
bigger.
Need it later.
The heels
ass
on these boots will make me taller.
Yeah. How about a good fuzzy sweater?
Jesus Christ. That's a sad come to, you know, fruition. Yeah. Like,
my youth was wasted.
Yeah. Fuck, I could have had a t-shirt on and some fucking shorts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I should have listened to hip hop. Some bullshit.
Dickies, right?
Yeah.
That's certainly right. So any final thoughts on Kurt Cobain?
I have to pee worse than I've ever had to pee on a podcast.
I motherfucking leave. You see me.
I almost did. Like, but I was like, no, we're going to end it. You know,
let me,
we got a lot to do. We
let
got
me shout out.
Actually, before you do that, one snuck in on us. Oh shit. Did I delete it? Oh fuck. I fucking got rid of it. Go ahead, Dave.
What? Okay. So again, just like our last episode, we wanted to talk about the people who joined us on Patreon this week. And we wanted to thank them. Again, if you're a fan of the show, go to whatever the hell the website is.
www.com.
Yes.
No, different one.
/
Yeah, patreon.com.
Damn, you're bad.
/
Sofa King Podcast.
Sofa King Podcast. Yeah.
Trying to give us money is half the fun.
Yeah, that's right.
Trying to give us money. Yeah.
And you can
try hard
on you.
Donate money and you get benefits and so forth. But handful of people, and again, we were looking into, we talked to some of them, we were curious what podcast like kind of went out of rotation for them in order for them to start listening to Sofa King Podcast. And the first one on the list was Michael Parker, and apparently he listened to the podcast Serial. Have you guys heard of that podcast?
Yeah.
It was different though, right? It was breakfast.
Oh, like, yeah, it's about cereal.
Shit, yeah.
It was about breakfast. Like,
yeah, well, him, it was
every week they cover a different breakfast.
CER.
Yeah, with a C.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Brian Essex actually signed up together. They're lovers.
Oh, and they
that's what it was. Yeah, they both listen to cereal. But the problem is they're actually talking about getting a divorce because Brian's favorite is Lucky Charms and Michael's favorite is Wheaties. So they just,
I like Wheaties.
Yeah, I like Wheaties too.
I listened to the Cookie Crisp episode.
That was a good episode.
It's pretty good. It was, yeah.
Because you learn a lot about the Cookie Crisp thief. That guy was
they had him on there.
Bastard.
He was a guest. Yeah. It was, yeah. I didn't know he was based off a real person.
They interviewed him from prison. Like, he's fucking hardcore.
He's a dick.
We had Laura Gavidon. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Not going to work here anymore. And she listened to a comedy show called Dingle and the Berries.
Oh, nice.
That was also a band. They might have gotten their name from
that. Might have been.
In the 60s,
sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Before it was a thing about toilet paper hanging off your butthole.
Blake Aviat listened to a podcast.
What the fuck is wrong with these last names?
I don't know, but his favorite podcast was simply called Sausage and Peppers.
Okay.
Sounds delicious.
That's a cooking show.
Yeah. Which kind of sounded phallic a little bit.
Could have.
No.
Like your sausage and peppers.
You hear what you want to hear, sir.
Yeah.
Another Freudian one.
You're right. Yeah. I'm not going to read anything into it. Desiree.
It's because you're vegan and you crave the meat.
Desiree.
The only meat he can eat is dick.
Desiree Henson listened to one called Rodney and the Dangerfields.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Which I thought,
why are
I
also, all these?
I kind of thought that was a little bit phallic.
That one definitely is. That's about ball sacks.
No, it's
for
not.
Fucking sure.
Cass Falkenberry listens to one called Crockin' Balls.
He is a cereal. Crockin' Balls. That guy is a cereal already, yeah.
But it was
who is it? What's his name?
Cass Falkenberry.
Crunch.
That's Falkenberry Crunch. But he listened to Crockin' Balls.
Fantastic. I think Falkenberry Crunch is a real cereal.
It might be, which is actually it's a podcast about Swedish meatballs.
Okay.
And Crockin' Balls.
That guy's from Bakersfield. He might be the one making the noise next door.
Meat on your mind.
Dustin McCauley had one called Porkin' Beans.
Okay.
And there's a subtitle, and it's actually the subtitle is a podcast about testicles.
Okay.
I'm going to say Brad talks about dicks a lot. Apparently you're thinking about him over there.
And then Andrew Nichols, his favorite was one called Squirrely Girls and Their Ugly Cousins.
Yes.
And he quit listening to that one. So he'd come over to, so we appreciate all of you. Thank you for listening.
Good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
So sponsors, so you can go pee.
Yeah.
I just drag it out.
I'm just going to sit here until my eyes turn yellow.
Go for it.
I have a urine hard on right now. It's the opposite of the blood one. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm uncomfortable.
I'm torn. thank you to El Yucateco Hot Sauce. You can get them at most major grocery stores, Walmart, Target, Mexican markets. If you're fucking cool, you can order it on Amazon. You can buy it on eBay. People found fucking jugs of it. You're lying if you say you can't find it. If you're outside the United States, fuck off. No, eBay, you can get it, and you can get it at mexgrocer.co.uk. I'm not sure where that's all valid or where that helps you, but you can also get it on El Yucateco's website.
Good overseas.
Yeah. Thank you to printdirtcheap.com. They print stuff. And I've been sending stickers out for those weenus pictures. That shit's over. No more elbows. I don't want to see them. I don't know why I was getting them.
Why was I getting fucking elbow pictures?
Because maybe they follow you. They don't follow me.
No, I was like,
plus we're both white guys with B names and shit gets confusing.
Fuck off, people.
They can't figure it out.
I can't tell which one's Brad, which one's Brad.
Yeah.
It happens a lot. It's the white guys. They say the black guy because they're fucking racist. They can tell by your tone, low, sweet fucking voice over there.
Sniggers.
Sniggers, please. Thank you to, who did I say so far? Printer Cheap. Thank you to.
We haven't done Tyrone's brother and cousin in a while.
Haven't showed up in a long time.
Yeah. Haven't been.
I don't remember his name anymore.
I don't remember either.
I don't either. Yeah. I don't remember him. I have to get him down here.
Yeah.
Because that shit was funny.
You're making me forget. Thank you to De Leon Graphics for our t-shirts and koozies. I'm not doing my fingers. That's what's happening. Yeah. Everyone's staring at my fingers. So I'm Nicolas Cage.
Just turned Nicolas Cage because he's forgetting shit.
Oh man, laughing and having a fucking urine hard on is so difficult. I'm gonna PLR myself. It's gonna be glorious.
Good.
So thank you to
Himself like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's so warm. Thank you to De Leon Graphics for t-shirts and koozies. Thank you to Digital Creations for our mugs, and thank you to Dan Camarillo Jiu-Jitsu. You can log on to armhunter.com. I still want people to go to Digital Creations and order fucking blankets and weird shit. I don't think anyone's done yet. I haven't heard anything about it.
Why not?
So did we already play our special clip, or is that coming at the end?
No, we'll play it right now.
It'll go in there somewhere, yeah.
So there's a special clip coming after we close the show.
Also, thank you to people who bought stuff this week. You guys went on crazy in the group and like bought and said pictures or doesn't count. And then like we have 6 orders I have to fill after I pee. And I'll get that stuff shipped out, I promise. Yeah.
So we called, Yuneri called in, Yuneri Dietrich. She's the Patreon member. Currently at the top, beating Chris Fama, who's apparently competitive.
He's missing in action.
Yeah.
And someone else called. Agent 35 checked in. They called and checked in.
But she left a couple messages. I think she was drunk. But so we ended up calling her and finding out what she was eating for dinner.
Yeah.
So I'll play that.
That funky intro.
Hey, thank you guys for having me in the Fight Club.
Oh, I forgot about you.
It is fantastic in this place.
Yeah.
Thank you for the beers.
And for knocking some fucking Kurt Cobain knowledge out of the park.
For sure.
Yeah, you did good.
It's a good time.
And and thanks for moderating our
man, I'll butt kick some bitches out. I'm ready.
Yeah, I did. I just do it on purpose. Like, I want to go in there and fucking kick people out. Just be like, careful. What can I get in?
You get that fucking tattoo, it doesn't matter. He'll kick you out, tattoo or not. Don't fuck around.
That's right.
Don't make him jealous.
Thank you to Mike Goldberg for the rum.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, fucking found that. Michael Goldberg, thank you for the rum.
It was delicious.
And I did find the other fucking tattoo guy's name, but I don't have it. I don't have it handy. Found it. I sent him I even sent him a t-shirt.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I sent him a gift pack. He lives in the fucking UK.
Hear that, guys? Get a tattoo on your forehead and you get a t-shirt.
That's right.
Yeah, if you get a tattoo, you get
we're going Charles Manson.
I'm still missing one.
Off.
No.
There's one more guy that got the other SK tattoo, and I just got to dig through the group and find him.
I am.
Yeah, post hit on that. Up. Jesus Christ. Hit you listen up. To the show.
Yeah. Are they gonna like royalty you guys for those marks or what is the deal with
so.
That?
Actually, yeah. So you better shut the fuck up. You owe us. Yeah.
Give us our shirt back, motherfucker.
Send us a shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something.
Thank you though. Thank you. That's,
thank you. That's legit.
She doesn't wash off.
So fucking awesome.
Yeah. It's an honor. Half ass famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're an idiot. That being said, we done?
Yep.
All right. Hi, Yanuri. Is Yanuri there?
Yeah, who's this?
This is Brad with the Sofa King podcast.
Oh, you're Sofa King guys.
Yeah. Yeah, we're recording right now. We wanted to get her on. We were just gonna record talking to her.
Oh shit, I'm eating.
So everybody's here, Dave, Brent, Sam.
What's up?
What's going on?
How you doing? Hey guys.
So what are you eating? We need to know what our fans are eating right now, what you're digesting.
I'm eating tomatillo sauce chicken with tomato quinoa, and I'm drowning it in yucateco and corn tortilla.
That's what's up.
Very nice.
That's what's up. So that's what we needed to hear. That was our that's our advertisement right there. So
what are your thoughts on Kurt Cobain?
Oh yeah, what do you think about Kurt Cobain?
Kurt Cobain?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's a lot of conspiracy about it. I wouldn't mind listening to all the different avenues of his ridiculous life. I mean, or he could just be kind of schizophrenic. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I heard he died from vigorous masturbation, but that's just one theory.
Hey, it's the real thing. It happened. Hey.
Yeah. You know somebody who died from that?
I know lots of crazy people who do it enough and have died in the act.
That's ridiculous. Do you have to clean up their mess?
Sometimes, yeah.
I think of that. Ah, that's horrible. Oh, you do, huh? We forgot about that.
Do you have any plans to wash the back window of your car?
Probably not, no. This is Texas, and it's, yeah, no.
Well, what time is it there? It's 8 o'clock?
Yeah, it's like 8. Thank you for not being assholes and calling me at 8
tonight. Yeah, no problem. Why are you eating?
It's a late dinner.
Yeah, that's a real late dinner. That's
yeah, 8 o'clock. Is it late? I don't know. What's considered late?
Like 5 o'clock dinner is good. 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock dinner? Yeah. What am I, Martha Stewart? That's great.
Well, it took you three hours to make what you made?
No, it took me 3 hours to do my homework. It took me like 30 minutes to make dinner.
All right. Well, you guys have a good night.
You too. Thanks, guys. Right. Bye.
Bye. Don't be a retard.